Music Session number 10767, Reel 15.
Mr. Joe Fitzpatrick, Reel 15. We were talking about your time in Soltau, POW camp. You mentioned how you cleaned your uniform by brushing it, not washing it. How did your uniform last while you were at Soltau?
Well, shortly after I was in the camp, and I got settled down with my mates, our school, what I called, for the grub and that, and I got issued with a black suit. Trousers had a 2-inch brown stripe on the outside inserted, and on the left arm was a 4-inch band inserted, so that if at any time that you wanted to patch it up, somebody would see that it had been patched up, you see. And it was quite a good uniform. I took my buttons off my old tunic, which I was attached to very much, and I stitched them onto my tunic of the black suit.
What kind of cloth was it?
Well, it's more of a serge, you know, really. More of a serge. It was very warm and very neat and very good, and the cap, the hat, was similar to our own hat that we were wearing, and it was in black with a brown band round. And when you got dressed up, you looked quite smart.
And that
lasted us until we were coming home.
And you cleaned that in the same way, just by brushing?
Well, it didn't get dirty, really, because we didn't know dirty work or anything. We didn't know work at all. Only with the administration of the parcels.
I'm coming on to the parcels, yeah. So what about actually yourself? How did you keep yourself clean? You mentioned we've talked about the latrines and the huts. Did you have a sort of washroom for yourselves?
No. You'd go outside and there'd be a tap there and some small tubs, and we'd go out there and have a swill down with it.
So just out in the open?
Yes, but I had a shower once a week.
Where was the shower block?
Well, they were just by the laundry. And Not after the camp, but there was a place there where you could go and have a shower. And it was quite easy. It was very good.
Was it warm water?
We didn't have any more lice, but we just had flea bites, that's all, which you could put up with.
Was the water cold or warm?
No. Cold water. No.
Would you all go? Was it a big communal shower, or one at a time, or how?
Well, you'd go as if it wasn't being used. I'm going to have a shower. I thought, go and have your shower, and you'd get a towel, and then have a rub down, and that'd do you for a week.
Who'd issued the towel?
Well, I'm not going to tell you. They were what we call lifted.
They were what do you call
lifted,
what?
Lifted. Oh yeah.
So, and you could just take a shower whenever you wanted, could you?
Yeah, we could. The NCOs.
What about your hair? Did they set up hairdressers, or did someone do it, rather, you know,
well,
in the camp?
We didn't let it grow long, but somebody had a pair of shears, and they shipped it off for you.
Would you grow a beard?
Pardon?
Did you or many of the men grow a beard?
Oh, there was one or two did, but not many. No.
So how would you shave?
Shave? Well, we'd have water and cold water, or if you wanted to warm it up on the stove, which we didn't really use, only in the winter a little bit, but not much. And because of getting the fuel and whatnot, and that was lifted. And the cold water does you no harm. Use cold water. We had to use cold tea in the front line.
What about your razor? Were they issued, or did you use your old army one? Did you have it with you?
No, I borrowed one. Somebody had a safety razor.
So it would be shared out
among them? Oh, yeah, yeah. And I didn't grow, my hair didn't grow much.
Now, let's get back to this food business. You mentioned earlier that you cooked it on the stove and you had tin plates and you only had one meal a day. How did you get your food issued? Where did it come from?
Well, we used to get a parcel about once a fortnight, and then what with my two Belgian friends, they got plenty of peas, beans, hard beans, and a bit of cabbage or a bit of vegetable, and kartoffels, which is potatoes. They were always, anybody went out working, they always come back with a pocket full of potatoes.
Now, where would the Belgians get this stuff from? The Belgians.
Well, they get it from home, you know, in a kind of a sack.
So you'd get your food parcels, they'd get these sacks.
That's right.
What would you have in your food parcel? Can you remember?
Oh, a little bit of bacon, a little bit of either margarine or butter, tea, cigarettes if you were on cigarettes, or tobacco if you were on tobacco, and. Oh, it was a right good hamper. A real good hamper it was.
And you got
and
them?
My mate, you see, he got one as well, you see. As I told you, as I went into the camp, the chap that was there was Regimental Sergeant Major out of the Australians. He was in charge, and we got an emergency parcel until... my own people, that is the Lancashire Comforts Fund, which was in Shudehill, Manchester, and my mother contributed about half a crown a week, that's as much as she could give, and they used to leave put a postcard in to say that you received it in good condition and everything, or any complaints or any suggestions, whatever you wanted, you see, and... if I'd have asked them for a football, they'd have sent me a football.
And how often did they come, these parcels?
Every fortnight.
Those parcels, would they arrive intact? You say you had a card to say they did. Would there be any pilfering en route?
Would there be any?
Pilfering, stealing from them.
Oh, no.
So the Germans gave you the parcel as they received it?
Well, they had an agreement, Vienna agreement of some kind, the Red Cross, that nobody would touch, you see. And the same went for the Germans when they were sent something. It wouldn't be touched.
Now, that was your parcel food.
Yeah.
Now, what did the Germans issue you to eat?
Or well, they used to bring a big, more or less like a tub, you see, sawed in half, and it was... full of sauerkraut, and we used to let the Russians that were starving help themselves to it.
So you didn't eat the official?
No, not after we got the parcels. No, it went through you like a dose of salts. I know.
What did it taste like?
Well, have you ever drunk cabbage water? Eh? Just like cabbage water.
Which isn't pleasant, I presume.
And there might have a little bit of horse flesh on the top. You chase that till you got it.
Did you ever eat it after you got your food parcel?
No.
So your food parcels were enough to eat on?
We made it do.
Now, how did you organise the cooking amongst... You had your parcels. How was it sorted out?
We don't need to organise it, because Joseph Brassier, the quartermaster sergeant of the Belgians, he was an expert chef, and he did it all and laid the table out and everything.
And how many he'd cook for you four, would he, or for more than that?
Pardon?
You said there were four of you. Would
yeah.
He'd just cook for the four of you, would he?
No, he cooked a little bit extra, because we had a big, and he was smart and addressed, this chap. I don't know what rank he was. a big Russian. He was over 6 foot, and his smart hat and tunic and trousers, and he used to stand a yard of, he used to make the beds and clean the shoes, and when we'd finished, what was left was for Ivan.
And so he was like a Russian servant.
And we'd give him a couple of cigarettes, and he was well in.
And he got some of the food.
Yes, what we like. You see, what we like. If we didn't eat much, but he always was provided with a bit of a grub.
You say you only cooked. He only cooked once a day. When would it be? I mean, which meal did you have?
We had it at 6 o'clock at night.
So you'd have nothing till six.
Well, no. When we get up in the morning, we'd have, as I told you, we got hard biscuits like a scone, you know.
Who issued them? The Germans?
No, that come from Switzerland, and the bread come from Holland. Two flat, long loaves, you know, about a foot or so long, over a foot or so long, and these hard biscuits, we'd pour a hole in them, and dip them in a little bit of in some water, then lay them on an edge of the hut, and then when they dried out. In the morning, we just cut one in half, stick a bit of jam between, and have a cup of coffee, and that'd do you. And if you wanted another lot, well, you could have it in the afternoon and put it on while evening.
So you sort of use this bread and biscuits and jam until your evening meal.
Yes.
What would a typical evening meal be like? You know, how would you make up what sort of things would you take and use from your parcels?
Well, it's hard to just recollect. For a minute, whatever it was, it was a good dinner. It was a good dinner. I mean, as regards a bit of meat, well, we got we must have got some meat, but I can't explain it exactly. But it was a real good dinner, and we knocked a lot off.
So, did you go hungry at all?
Well, no, I don't think so. No. No, but you see, the Russians, there were so many of them coming in and going out and whatnot. Well, they were starving, they're walking about like skeletons, begging.
Eh? And you gave
and them... Ivan used to just go out and shoo them off, you see. And
how would you dole the sauerkraut out to the Russians? See?
Well, they'd help themselves at the end of the outside the hut.
You'd just put the tub outside?
No, when they brought the tub, they put it outside the hut.
And you just left it there?
Yes. So none left in there inside 10 minutes. Because the Russians would be there doing their best.
Did you get
We had one or two fellas working in the cookhouse, you know. Eh? And I suppose if there was anything decent, well, of course, a good cook like anybody, they'd make sure that if it was all good food, they'd be on a bit of velvet.
Now, who would the cookhouse be cooking for if most of the prisoners cooked for themselves? Would they be the ones preparing the sauerkraut and things?
They cook the same amount for whoever was in the camp, and whatever they did with it, it was no concern of the German. Clear?
Not quite, no. Who were they cooking for, the cookhouse?
Well, they'd be cooking for the majority of the prisoners.
So they'd be the ones preparing the sauerkraut or whatever?
Yeah.
And what you're saying is that if there were any choice bits, then some of that would get back to your hut?
No, we never touched German food after we got our parcels going. Never touched them.
Well, what did you mean about the cooks would be able to get a bit of something for themselves then?
Well, I don't know what they get, but they get something. They might be doing something, and they say, "Oh, I'll have a meal of that." You know, they don't themselves if it was eatable.
But you wouldn't get
we
any
wouldn't,
of that.
We wouldn't. No. And then if there was an Englishman, he'd scoff at it. See, but the others would be only too glad to eat it. Any other nation.
What this Russian servant? What was he like? I mean, you've described him a bit. Was he able to speak English at all? How did you communicate with him?
Well, he could speak a bit of German, you know, like, and Russian. We understand that when you're living or you're meeting somebody, you can understand and you can get through with it. You can get through with it.
How did you meet him? I mean, did he come to you or did you pick him
out?
Oh,
he come to us. I think Joseph brought him. Joseph Presser. I think he brought him. I don't know what job that I haven't had. I never asked. We never bothered about anything else, only that he was there every night and he'd salute each one, go to each one and salute them. Good night. Good slaven.
And he did... He polished your boots, kept your and kept the hut tidy.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't have to do that sort of thing then?
Well, I mean, we straighten it up. And a good soldier always straightens his bed up. And we slept on a stillage. You know what a stillage is? Well, it's the upper deck. It's like aboard a ship, you see. But it was solid across board. And he climbed in from the foot end and Bob's your uncle.
You slept on the floor, you told me before.
Oh, yes.
I understand. What about your health? I mean, was the diet you got, did it have enough vitamins and fresh food to keep you healthy?
Kept me very fit. I was very fit. Very.
So you didn't suffer from any ailments?
No other ailments at all.
If you had, was there any sort of medical provision you could go to?
Oh, well, you'd go to the hospital for attention and a check-up.
But did you ever have to do that?
No.
What about your teeth? Were they all right?
There was one man, Tommy Johnson, a Scotch lad in the Argyll Sutherlands. He had pneumonia, and I stayed up all night with him, changing the sheet. And I told you, I think, I don't know if you recorded it or not, that he tipped me when we got to Catterick. Did I tell you that? No. Well, when we arrived at Catterick, Tommy come to me and give me a pound note. Well, it was the first pound note we'd really seen, because he'd only been in operation a couple of years. And I said, he said, yeah, do you have a drink with me? I said, no, go on, no. And I tried to refuse him, but he wouldn't have it. He said, you saved my life and have a drink with me. And I did so.
What about the rest of the British prisoners? Were their health all right?
Pretty good.
Were there any people who'd been there a long time from the early years of the
war? There were people there from 1914 in the camp.
And was their health? The
majority of them were bedded down with certain jobs and they were quite comfortable.
So,
and you know... When you see these sentries walking about on the TV and people are not conversant with it, I laugh sometimes. And you never saw that there. And the Germans never entered your hut. Unless they were after somebody. But they were never molested you or anything like that. Poor Jerry was in a very bad state, you know. He'd been tamed down a little bit.
The war was starting to turn against them, you mean?
Well, I mean to say, they advanced so far, they overrun themselves, and as I told that RAMC sergeant, I said, you'll run up against a stone wall because the Yankee lads are at the back, waiting, leaving the girls in France, and when the bugle calls, and... They were brought into the line then, into positive action.
That was
about July.
What was the layout of the camp then? How was it organised?
In our hut, there was only Belgians, French, and English, all NCOs.
And how did you get on with the
very well?
Besides the one, your real friend Brasser. What about the others? How did you get on with it?
Everybody knew. Well, I mean, say, you get very conversant, and they thought a lot about me, I think. One chap, he was they said he was a millionaire, a tall fella, and we went on an episode one day, him and I, and, well, one evening, and he used to say, yeah, Joe, give me money so that I could go and have a drink in the canteen. And I kept saying, oh, go and play cards in the Russian's officer's bungalow. He had a room there, and he took a liking to one of our chaps, a real good footballer, Preston his name was. He'd had a bad leg injury, but it didn't interfere with his football. And he used to be highly delighted with watching us play football, this young Russian officer. And he was there for administration, you see, on behalf of the Russians. And when he was leaving, he donated this hut, because the Russians had paid for it, you see. He donated it to Len Preston. And we still used to go in there and play cards. And he used to stand and watch us. And then when he went, we used to do just the same, because there was only Len had a key to it. And we used to go there and...
So where was your hut in relation to these other huts? And was it wired off inside, the camp split up into different parts?
Did you not see them pictures?
Well, if you could describe it for the people, because they won't be able to see them on the...
Well, there were the big huts divided into four, and there was just like an encampment, row after row.
Was the encampment divided at all internally? Were you allowed to go anywhere within the encampment?
Well, it was a very big camp. And of an evening, whether the weather was permissible or even so, and we used to walk round the camp. And some had walked one way and some had walked the other way, round and round for exercise. Eh?
So and you were allowed anywhere in it?
And as you passed them, come on, Savar, we. And where we'd go, we knew nearly everybody you'd come in contact with.
And what were... So Belgians and French. The huts were in rows inside this big encampment.
Yes, and it was in two parts as well.
Ah, well, that's what I was asking. What's
there was a road going in between.
What was the other part?
Well, we were in that other part first, and then we moved into this other one. See? And they'd be utilising that for several different things, you see. Or leaving it empty. That was where we played football.
The other part?
Mm. Where the football ground was.
Now, what was on the outside of the camp? What were the sort of...
The outside area?
Yes.
Well, there was supposed to be a machine gun, but there wasn't one there, like at the top of the road, overlooking the camp and overlooking the latrines. But that never worried us. There was always a postern on the gate, a sentry, and if you wanted to go out, you'd just say laundry, yeah, and you'd walk out. And in the camp itself, there was people able to forge anything at all. And if you wanted to pass being done, which they would make a copy of it, and in case you was asked for your pass, you would have a pass. But nobody would interfere with you going out.
So what was the fencing like? I mean, was there
much... It was netting, you know, barbed wire and netting, about 10 foot high.
Was it a serious obstacle, or could you have got through it or under it?
Well, I mean to say, there's always a way out, you know, and if you can't get over the top, well, you go underneath.
And it was just one fence, was it?
Yes.
Were you allowed to go right up to it, or were you kept back from it?
No, we'd walk along the side of it. We'd walk all round the camp, do a dozen trots round, walking round.
Now, where would the guards be, the German guards?
Well, there'd only be one on the sentry. I don't know where they had a place... For the Germans, such as a guard room or something like that, I never bothered, I never saw one.
So all you'd see of the German presence there was the one guard on the gate?
The one guard on the gate, was there.
And that gate was the gate between the encampment with all the huts in and the camp?
Yeah.
Is that right? Or outside?
It was on the outside gate.
So the gate right out of the camp?
No, not right out of the camp. It'd be along did have a gate going out from the barbed wire, you see. The barbed wire would be entangled in the netting, so that you'd have to get some pliers to cut through if you wanted to go through. But you never saw anything like that.
But where
you never saw anybody digging under the hut.
What I'm trying to get at is, where was the sentry in relation to... there was a gate. Where did the gate go to? Was that just the outside world?
Onto the road.
The road out of the camp?
Yes. Yeah.
Because you said you'd go past him to get to the laundry, but you said the laundry was in the camp.
No, it's on the other side of the camp. Outside.
So what was this outside area? Was that wired in as well, or was that just open? Just open?
It's all open. All countryside then.
So the only bit that was wired in was the actual camp.
Yes.
And outside that were buildings like the laundry and the hospital and the guards.
Yeah.
Any guard accommodation.
Yeah.
Would that be right?
Yeah.
So what about... So that was the German presence as far... You didn't see anything else of the Germans... as far as you were concerned, other than this one guard?
The only time that we were on the food, remind me, we were on the food, and about 20 of us would set off with a couple of postons, that's a guard, and we'd march down the road to the barn off the station, and we had a hut there, a big hut, and it was just like a post office with stillages, you see, and whatnot, and names and whatnot. We knew that there was an emigrant coming, that was a load of parcels, or bread, or whatever it was, and we would go there and we'd unload it, and then we'd put them in the stillages where, say, there were three men, one man, see? And then we would proceed and put them in parcels, six parcels in a sack, four to six parcels in a sack, and we'd put a note in of what was in, and then we would stitch it up and seal it and label it. And then we'd wheel it out under the platform to a certain spot where the guards' van would stop. And those that were going to be the recipients of it would know what train it was coming on as readily as the clock went round, that their parcels would be on the way and would be at that station at a certain time. And if they were working on a farm and had a transport, like a lorry and a horse, they would meet it and then collect the parcels, if there was four or five, six, and even if they were working in some factory, they would know what time to go and get their own parcels. See? And
Or was it just familiarity?
Eh?
Were they told it, or would they just know because it had always been on that train? How did they know, if they're in a factory, that their parcels were coming?
It's the same as a postman comes with something, a pension, and you get it on a certain day, and you know what day it's going to come.
So who'd tell you that day, though? The Germans would?
The Germans would take the sack. The guard on the train would dump it at the right place, and they'd be waiting for him.
But what I mean is, who would tell them what day it was?
Well, I mean to say, they'd be notified from the camp, from our camp. See? They'd be notified. Well, I mean, for the start, but they were there for the duration. See? And if they were working on a farm, they weren't on a bad thing at all. And it's known that many, many of them stayed behind, married a German, and stayed behind. Many of them. What's the use of going home if they've got no home to go to?
So when you packed them up, like you told me, what would happen then? This is your job, isn't it, that you used to do?
This is the only work we did.
So what would happen then when you got them into the bags and stitched them up? They'd pick them up, would they?
We'd take them on the platform. wheel him onto the platform, put him on a certain spot, and the guard would know. He'd see the label on as well, such a place, and he would put it over there right away.
And there they'd meet the train there? The prisoner would
meet them. The train. Oh, yes. Yes, they'd meet the train. And then again, you see, what with their parcels and a bit of farm grub, you know,